This week's Parsha, Parshas Noach, has a lot going on and definitely a lot to speak about, but one thing that caught my attention was the comment of the Chafetz Chaim al HaTorah, and I later found that the Alshich has the very same interpretation in his commentary on Chumash as well. The Pasuk says, Shofech Dam HaAdam, Ba'adam Damo Yishafech. And it's a very difficult Pasuk to really translate. What does it mean, Shofech Dam HaAdam Ba'adam? How do you spill somebody's blood in a person? What exactly does it mean you kill somebody inside of himself? So the Alshich and the Chafetz Chaim both write the same thing. Zehu Hamevayish Es Chaveru. This is talking about murdering a person who's still standing, meaning the person is still here, they're still alive, but you've in some way killed them, you've in some way exterminated them by humiliating them and by shaming them publicly. And when I saw that comment of the Alshich and the Chafetz Chaim, I couldn't help but to think about how much more difficult this has become in our generation, when we have become so accustomed to politicians who are so quick to share uncorroborated and unsubstantiated stories about other people and accusations, and everyone's willing to say things that they don't really know are true at all, and it leads to such a communal discord, it leads to so much humiliation of people that might not even be deserving of such. So I was reading a couple of years ago, but I saved it, Mitch Albom, who is a best-selling author, once wrote an article about public shaming in our generation, in the age of the internet, and he wrote, I remember as a child going to stand in the corner, right? Anyone remember when a teacher used to tell a child, that was like the biggest humiliation you can imagine. A teacher would tell, I know it never happened to you, but a teacher would tell a child to go stand in the corner. And that, he says, was a form of student punishment. And he writes that you can sense the eyes of your classmates on your back as you had a hot flush of embarrassment flowing through your body. Sometimes you stood there for an hour, or at least it felt like an hour. These were ways, even in our days, to be publicly humiliated. If you trace the idea back, there are some old remnants of it. The idea was, if you shame someone in front of their peers, they will next time think twice about repeating and offending that kind of behavior. However, today, he says, someone parks over the yellow line in a parking spot. You take a picture of their license plate and share it on Facebook with all of your friends so that the world can mock them. You don't like an email that you got from your child's teacher. You post it on Reddit in order that you can destroy the reputation of that teacher. We live in an attention-seeking, social media-driven world where people thrive on getting their 15 minutes of fame or going viral. We crave the validation, we crave the approval and the attention in order to feel seen, in order to feel heard, and in order to feel understood. We all want to be noticed and liked, but where does it end? And what is the price of all this public shaming, especially when children are involved? I was thinking, you know, there's someone in shul who sends out videos very often on WhatsApp. And sometimes I look at them and sometimes I ignore them. But some of the things that I see, sometimes I write back to them. I'm like, there's a person here. There's somebody. You understand that the video that you're sharing is humiliating to the person that the video was taken of. It may be funny for all of us, but do you understand? Imagine if that was you and the world was sharing the video about you, and it was going all around your community, it would be something that we would be very, very embarrassed of. And he says that we forget that there's a person, there's a family, there's a child that's impacted by converting a private mistake into a public flogging. There are lives that are at stake, and these people are actually people. It was a very astute observation. There's a book that I read called Is Shame Necessary? It was written by a professor in NYU who studies a lot of environmental studies. I don't know exactly what she does, but this obviously is an area of study that she looked into very heavily. She's a psychologist, and she said, I think it really captures this issue very well. She says, the speed at which information can travel, the frequency of anonymous shaming, the size of the audience it can reach, and the permanence of the information is what separates digital shaming from shaming of the past. It used to be you humiliated someone, you shamed them, life moved on, and everybody forgot about it. But today, first of all, the reach and the magnitude of how far it can go when you publicly humiliate someone is something that can really have devastating consequences. I don't know if everyone remembers in 2013, there was a woman, I think her name was Justin Sacio or something like that. I don't remember exactly her last name or how to pronounce it. She was on a flight from New York going to South Africa. Anyone remember the story? And she was an executive in a company in New York City. Anyway, when she went for the stopover in Heathrow in London on her way down to South Africa, she sent out a tweet. She only had 170 followers or 180 followers, and she sent out a tweet that said, I'm on my way to South Africa. I hope I don't get AIDS, but I also happen to be white. She wrote something like that. And then she went to sleep. She went on the flight. She went to sleep. And by the time she woke up, there was a crowd of people in South Africa waiting for her to land. She had already been fired from her job in New York because people online were destroying her for the comment that she made. And she meant it as a joke. She meant it in jest. But yet, We see how devastating a consequence it can have, and people were rioting outside of the flight. By the time she landed, she didn't even know what hit her. She had no idea what was going on behind her back. But this is a major issue, and the Chafetz Chaim writes that the first line of defense that a person can have, not to get caught up with all of these problems that we find today, is number one, he says, Eichus HaShmira, what is the highest line of defense that we can all have as individuals to make sure we don't get lost in this trap? Is number one, Lemayit HaHischabrus LeBnei Adam Imlo LeDvar Mitzvah. He says we have become so enmeshed, so ingrained with global communities, with people that are outside of ourselves, and it's not for a Dvar Mitzvah. And he says, there's no reason for it. If it's your parnasa, if it's your job, if you're doing it because you're helping other people, so of course, you need to collaborate and interact with others. But says the Chafetz Chaim, we get ourselves involved in so many other groups outside of ourselves that are so unnecessary, and besides the waste of time that it is, he says it leads to things that really should not be done. V'imu muchrach lehischaber, says the Chafetz Chaim, some of us have an obligation to involve ourselves in community and in much larger circles than ourselves. He says, number one, Yizbonin mitchila benafsho mashi yidaber imayim. Think before you say something, before something leaves your mouth, think a little bit. What is it that I'm about to say? V'ha'ikr shelo yirtza l'shma daber she'ena shayachlo. Don't listen to information that is totally not relevant or totally not pertinent to your life, makes no difference to your life at all. Just don't watch it, don't listen to it, don't read it. It's something that has no relevance, it doesn't pertain to you at all. The Yod, number two, he says, and this I find very interesting, he talks about the Rabbanus, Lo yikabel al atzmo shum davar sarara, don't accept any position, shegorem harbe hischabrus uvikuchim, where you will be embroiled in politics. For example, he says, and example number one is, Kegon Mishra HaRabbanus. He says, imagine you have a person who accepts the position of the rabbinate, and unfortunately we know that sometimes there's some politics that's involved in having such a position, and says the Chafetz Chaim, one has to be very careful. Ki kemat yefsha shelo yilached bidiburim asur ma'idezeh. It is almost impossible that at some point in that position that you're going to hold, that you won't be embroiled and you won't be enmeshed in some humiliation of a person. There's a board meeting and people are talking about someone in the shul, or people are angry about someone in the community, and we talk about things that really should not be spoken about. I once read a story about Rabbi Aaron Cutler that he was asked, why is it fair that the great Rosh Yeshiva throughout all the generations have had to travel all around the world to collect money? Why is it so hard for them? So this question has been asked to many great tzaddikim over the years. Why shouldn't it be given to them easily? So I believe the Chafetz Chaim once said the answer is because he wants that it should be such a great schus, and the Ribbono Shel Olam wants that we should spread the schus out to Jews all over the world. So they make us travel to every person's home, that everybody should have the opportunity to give a little bit. If we were able to have one person write the check, that wouldn't be the same opportunity for the entire Klal Yisrael. But apparently, the story goes that Rabbi Aaron Cutler responded very frighteningly, but he said that very often you have people who are involved in chinuch, and they don't realize that they unjustifiably criticize one of their talmidim, one of their students who does something wrong. They'll call them out in the middle of a shiur, or they'll humiliate them in front of the whole yeshiva. And Rabbi Aaron Cutler said, because of that, that is considered halbanas panim, that is considered like humiliating somebody in the highest form that you can. And said Rabbi Aaron Cutler, that is considered like ritzicha, as we'll talk about tomorrow. That is tantamount to murder, as the pasuk in our parasha says, shofech dam ha'adam, ba'adam damo yishafech. And yet he said, we know that you have an obligation that when you murder someone b'shogeg, you chayv to go to galus. Said Rabbi Aaron Cutler, nobody has in mind to really humiliate somebody else deliberately, intentionally. I don't really want to do it. I do it because the circumstances call for such, but sometimes it's inappropriately done, and therefore he said, because of that, the Rosh Yeshiva have to go all over the world like they're in galus, because they have to be mechaper for themselves for the terrible aveira of humiliating some of their students that they're sometimes involved with. I thought that was an amazing, amazing admission of Rabbi Aaron Cutler. I think it's an astounding observation, but it's something that they quote the story in his name. It's something that he was sensitive to, and it's something that he was afraid of. So the story goes in the Halicha Shlomo, which is written by the grandchildren of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. They have a story there that one time their grandfather was sitting by Mesibas Talmidei Chachamim Ukahal Rav. There was a large gathering of people, great Talmidei Chachamim, and a big group that was there as well. Upasach echad min rabbanim b'shira ba'ofen she'orer gichuch. He says that one of the rabbanim got up and started singing a niggin that he had no idea how to sing, and he was totally off key, and he had no idea what he was doing. And it was a little bit humorous. It was funny. And everybody started to laugh. And they said they watched how Reb Shlomo Zalman was sitting there, Yashav Yechidi Ben Kulam, in a whole room full of people, full of Talmidei Chachamim and full of an audience. He was the only one who sat b'kovid rosh. He didn't have a smirk on his face. He didn't smile. He didn't do anything. Lo nikar al panav mu'uma. He sat there blank stared like he was the entire evening. At shasiyim halashi raso. Until the other person finished with his niggin, finished making a fool out of himself. And Reb Shlomo Zalman didn't make any sort of intimation that he found it to be uncomfortable or strange at all. And he says, L'pliyas ha-masubim, after everybody was so amazed that Reb Shlomo Zalman was sitting there, they approached him and they asked him, how is it that you were able to overcome the natural human instinct, which was to laugh at such a humiliating, at such a funny thing? And Reb Shlomo Zalman said back to them, he was shaking, and he said, I don't understand. Hare halbanas panimika. You don't think I was afraid of the fact that I was going to humiliate the person if I smiled? Of course, the human inclination is, the human instinct is, we should laugh at someone who does something strange, at someone who looks different, at someone who does something differently than we might, at someone who's doing something unconventional. But yet, said Reb Shlomo Zalman, do you not think that I was sitting there petrified over the fact that I'm going to violate the Avera of Halbanas Panim? So they have another story about him as well, that he once called the students in Kol Torah. That was his yeshiva. He was the Rosh Yeshiva. He called them in. And he was very strong in his words with them. And he said, I don't understand how all of you were laughing. There was one of the boys in the yeshiva who had a stutter, or he spoke in an unusual manner. And he said, everybody was laughing. So he called them in and he said, how dare all of you laugh at this student who's one of your chever in the yeshiva? So the boy said to him, what did you expect us to do? We're yeshiva bachram. How are we supposed to hold ourselves back? So he said, Haya aleichem lechanik esatzmechem. If you can't hold yourself back, too bad. Then choke yourself. You don't deserve to live. He said, a human being has a right to have human dignity, and we have no right as people who are interacting with him or her to humiliate them. And if it means that you have to make yourself very uncomfortable and you have to excuse yourself from the situation, said Reb Shlomo Zalman, that's what we have an obligation to do. So there's another story told about Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin, the great Sadik of Yerushalayim, that he was in a position in his life where he had some sort of chemical imbalance. I don't know exactly what it was, but he had to have a lot of sugar and he wasn't allowed to have any salt. I don't know what that's called. I don't know what exactly the condition was. But he had a situation where he had to have a lot of sugar every day and he wasn't allowed to have any salt. But every day he had a group of students who used to come study with him, and one of them always went out to make him a tea. One fine day, one of the Talmidim went out and made him a tea, and because they knew the Rebbe needs a lot of sugar, they put in a few scoops full of what they thought was sugar, and it turned out that it was really the salt. Nobody noticed. They brought the cup of tea into the Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin, and he sat there like usual, made the brach on it, drank the whole thing, and finished the cup. The Rebbetzin comes running in. She says, the salt is on the counter. The salt is there. How could it be? You serve my husband salt. Don't you know that it's dangerous for him to have? And the student said, what are you talking about? I make him the tea every day. I always serve him the sugar in the tea. I know how to make it. And she said, no, you made a mistake. Anyway, she tasted the last drop, and it was so sour. It was all salty. And she said to her husband, what are you drinking it after you took the first sip? Didn't you realize that this was dangerous for your health? Didn't you realize this is something that was not made properly? And he said back to them, I don't understand. He said, Noach lo la'adam she'yapel atzmo l'toch kivshan ha'esh. Is it dangerous for me? Of course it's dangerous for me. But what was the alternative? I would sit there and tell my student that he just made me a cup of tea that had salt in it instead of sugar. Can you imagine the shame? Can you imagine the humiliation in front of everybody else? So one final story that the Maharsham shares, and then we'll daven mincha. The Maharsham writes in one of his volumes on Shulchan Aruch Yerideya, he says that he heard from somebody who was present at the following occasion when there was a big fair. He says there was a big get-together. I don't know exactly what it was. But he said there were people from all over the world that came to shop and sell all their goods. And he says there was a great opportunity because there was an individual there who was a nanas. There was an individual there who was a midget. And this was not something that they were used to seeing all the time in Europe. You only knew the people in your community. You didn't know people from outside. So it was the first time that the Jewish community had seen a midget. So there was one Jew who was so excited. After all, the Shulchan Aruch says, when you see somebody who has that characteristic, who has that kind of deficiency, that kind of deformity, so you make a bracha on him, Mishana Habrios, that the Ribono Shel Olam made different kinds of human beings that look slightly different from each other. So this young man ran up to the nanas, he ran up to this midget, and he picks him up. He says, Tafas osa nanas kalulav. He picks him up like a lulav, and he's so excited to make the bracha, and he's shuckling with him in his hands, and he says, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam mishan habrios, and he's really excited. It's the first time in his life he could make such a bracha. And the Maharsham said, he commented on that story, and he said, Oy lo la osa chasid shote. I feel sorry for that silly man, because he says, Shahafach mitzvah, that he took instead of an opportunity to make a bracha and to have the performance of a mitzvah, he took that opportunity to be over on the Isra of Ritzicha, Umeirov sechluso, he says, because of his silliness, because he lost perspective, because he didn't understand that you're dealing with a human being who has sensitivities, a human being who has feelings, because of that, ive mitzvaso v'chalko ba'olam haba. Because of that, he lost his chelek in olam haba, and he created for himself, I think the Maharsham says, a path of gold straight into Gehenim. That was what he did. Instead of the place of having an opportunity to make a bracha that he never makes, he paved for himself a golden path with all the Hidurim straight into Gehenim, says the Maharsham. It's something that we need to be so careful about, but the Chafetz Chaim writes, as well as the Al Shechan Ar Parsha, this really perhaps stems from a pasuk in the Parsha where we're told, Shofech Dam Ha'adam Be'adam Damo Yishafech. How is it possible to ever murder a person while the individual is still alive? The answer is, if you're involved in public humiliation, if you do something to that person that makes them be embarrassed, it is an opportunity for unfortunate consequences, and sometimes it has the most devastating consequences, as we said, that really have a very difficult time being repaired.